This is episode 3 of season 5 of The Bad Apples. Hi everyone, my name is Claude Tu, and this is my Bog cast and Speaks cast about technology and Linux and geeky stuff. Let's see, Fluxbox. So at work, at one of my new jobs, I got a few new jobs lately, but one of my new jobs I lucked out, and I'm actually on Ubuntu all day long. I'm just the desktop that I use and the team that I'm a part of actually uses Ubuntu as their operating environment, which obviously as a Linux geek really, really excites me and makes me love going to work. So that's really, really a great thing. Everyone should be so lucky. So I'm really happy to have a gig where I'm actually on Ubuntu. Of course, the Ubuntu that they gave me was the default install of whatever the latest is, I guess 9.10, and it's a GNOME desktop. I don't really use the GNOME desktop all that much. I'm not familiar with its conventions or its configuration or layout, and so I just figured, well, I can't deviate too much from what everyone else is using and install something completely different, but I can at least configure my working environment so that it works a little bit better for me. So I decided to put Fluxbox on the computer. And also a couple of K apps and X apps that I use and that I'm more familiar with than GTK apps. So figured I would do that. And I did that, and Fluxbox, of course, installs really quickly. It's a tiny little installation. And I took some I configured it and took some screenshots and put them up on unixporn.com. And a couple of people actually commented on the screenshots. Not commented on the website because we closed comments because of spam. Wonderful thing spam is. But, people would have talked to me about it in, like, IRC. So, to that end, I figured it might be a good idea to do a segment on configuring Fluxbox to really work for you. And obviously a lot of this will be personal preference. There's Fluxbox, and then there's the way you work and the way you want to work with Fluxbox, and there's Fluxbox and the way that I work with Fluxbox, which is a very specific way. I don't think it's entirely unique, but it falls into a category, and you can try it or not and see how you like it. But the point is, the goal is to demystify, I guess, or just kind of explain better how to configure the Fluxbox environment to be a real working environment. I mean, by default, it works. You know, it works well, but there are tweaks, of course, that you can make to make it really, really your own. And I'd hear people talk about Fluxbox on podcasts or in IRC or whatever, and you ask them how to do something, and they'll just say, oh, it's easy, just modify the keys file. Or you just put in a script, in the folder. You know, you're just like, okay, well, thanks, but that wasn't very clear. That's more of a summary than a tutorial. So this is going to be more of a tutorial than a summary. So this is some very specific things that you can do to Fluxbox, and you can try it out, see if you like it this way, see if it works for you, and if not, you can change it. But at least you have an idea of how to get everything going on. So Fluxbox, I like to think of it, I like to think of it as almost a front end for your system, meaning that, like, GNOME and KDE and even to some degree I would say XFCE, they're so complete. They're little kiosks of a desktop, you know, they're like the desktop environment that you're using, and that is that. And you've got all your little your GTK apps, or you got all your KDE, your K apps or whatever, and they're all kind of very integrated into that environment, which is a great thing, and I love it. I'm gonna take a sip of coffee. It's a great thing and I love it, but sometimes you want a little bit more, I guess, flexibility. And even, you could even call it maybe, toolkit agnosticism or something like that, you know, where you don't really care so much, you know, am I a GNOME user or am I a KDE user? Although, to be fair, I'm basically using my Fluxbox as KDE, because I'm using all K apps practically, or some X apps and no GNOME apps. But the point is that if you wanted to, you could kind of have Fluxbox and then just piecemeal, as it were, a whole bunch of different things together to make sort of your own little environment. That's how I think of it. Okay. So towards saying, okay, I'm going to configure my own environment, I think of Flux. I divide Fluxbox in my mind into four areas. There's the Fluxbox startup file. That's one big important place that we're going to do things in. There's the Fluxbox keys file. That's another important place that we're going to do things in. There are the applications that we're going to piecemeal together. And then there's the look and the feel, and I guess you could even say, go so far as to say, the integration. Okay, so let's tackle each one one by one in that order. So the startup file is in your home directory. It's in .fluxbox/startup. called Startup. It's well commented, but don't worry, I'm not going to just say that and leave you to go deal with it yourself. It is well commented, but it breaks down to really basically having one function, which is to start Fluxbox. Now, before it starts Fluxbox, it gives you the opportunity to plug in pretty much anything else that you want to start before starting Fluxbox. So whatever you do here before the last line, which is exec Fluxbox, before that, if you enter things to start, then it's going to run those things. You probably want to send them to the background in most cases so that you're freeing up that sort of terminal session that is going to start Fluxbox for you, but it's just basically a list of the things that you want to start, and they'll either run in the background and or concurrently with Fluxbox. For instance, in my startup file, if you open it, it'll say there's a comment at one point that says applications you want to run with Fluxbox, and that's commented out. But then you can, below that comment line, just add all the little files that you want or the little applications that you want to run. I didn't really used to know what I should run. What would I possibly want to run with Fluxbox? I mean, why don't I just start Fluxbox and then I'll start the things? And then you start to kind of understand certain things that you want to actually implement. So Clipper, for instance, the KDE clipboard tool that remembers like the last 11 things that you've copied, you know, so that you can go back and paste things in different order and stuff like that. Really handy little clipboard. It's called Clipper, spelled with a K. And if you do a which Clipper on your system, it'll tell you exactly where it is. But since it's in your path, you don't really need to worry about the full path. So I just put in Clipper, K-L-I-P-P-E-R, and then the ampersand sign, so space ampersand. And the ampersand sign sends a process to the background, and that is very important, as Fluxbox does. I think it says so in this file, but if it's something that you want to start and then continue on to some other thing, you need to put the ampersand sign behind that, because otherwise it'll tie up your session. So Clipper and. Another KDE helper app that I use is KMix, because Fluxbox by default isn't so complete in an environment that they give you a volume control, really. So if you want a volume control, you need to choose a volume control application, and the one I know and love is KMix. Well, I don't know how much I love it, but I know it. I mean, it's just a volume control. It's not that big of a deal, but that's the one I know. So I start KMix and then the ampersand sign. You could use, you know, the GNOME volume thing, probably. I don't really know. I've never tried, but maybe, I don't know if XFCE has their own. You know, you could probably use that. Really, whatever you want to use, you can just pop in there. The cool thing about both of those is that because in the .fluxbox/init, I think, is the file, which, again, is in your home in the .fluxbox folder. There's some kind of rule in there, I'm pretty sure it's in there, that says allow applets to appear in the Fluxbox toolbar, or something like that. And it's a default setting that seems to be on, at least it was on the Ubuntu install. I don't know if it is if you're installing Flux from source. I haven't done that either ever or in a while. I mean, I've had it running on Slackware, and I'm pretty sure that was a default setting there too. So that might just be a default something from upstream. But anyway, the point is that as long as that is enabled, then you will see Clipper and KMix up in the Fluxbox little toolbar, as they call it, you know, the panel, as I guess you might know it if you're a GNOME or KDE user. So that is really nice. They just appear right there in your little toolbar, like a little system tray almost, and you can run them right from there. It's really nice. I did not have to place like Wicked or anything like that in there, or Network Manager or whatever, K Network Manager. I didn't have to do that because the computer that I'm on at work is hardwired and has a IP address assigned to it. When it boots, well, I never turn it off, but presumably when it boots, it's going, well, I do know that I have restarted it once, so it finds its IP address and doesn't really require any interaction from me, so I don't bother. But if you're doing this with wireless, like on your laptop or something, you might want to start Wicked or something like that. Another thing that I do start is X Screensaver, which is, of course, the just a little screensaver application that is kind of plain vanilla X server screensaver. It's just X screensaver, all one word. You can install it if it's not already installed. A lot of things come with it installed already. KDE and GNOME, as far as I recall, I know KDE does not. I'm pretty sure GNOME does not. They kind of came up with their own screensaver application or whatever, so I didn't have to turn anything off, but in order to get X screensaver, which, again, I'm just more familiar with than really either of the other two, I don't really use a screensaver on KDE usually, so I don't really bother. But at work, I figured, well, I'm going to want to get up from my computer, walk away, and best practice, you know, of course, is to lock your screen. So I figured I'd put a screensaver up there, just because there are, you know, Windows users and Mac users all around as well, so I wanted it to be pretty when I walked away from my computer so that they were all impressed. The next screensaver has some really nice OpenGL little animations that will come up. You have to kind of go through it and pick them by hand and make sure that something stupid doesn't come on. But I've got a couple of good ones that come on. So anyway, I start that, X screensaver, and then of course the ampersand sign. I started FB set BG, which is the Fluxbox set background script or program, and that's just a single command, and I actually didn't put an ampersand behind it, so it doesn't seem to be necessary. So I put FB set BG space tilde slash picture slash images slash 1680x1050.png, and all that is actually a picture that is in my pictures images folder called 1680x1050, because I had to take it into the GIMP and actually adjust it for the screen size. So that's just pointing to a very specific picture in my home directory. And then after that, there is the final line, which is exec fluxbox. So that's exec fluxbox. And you save that, and that's really about it. I mean, now from now on, when you start Fluxbox, it's going to run through those commands and then start Fluxbox, and you will see everything that you're supposed to see running, and other stuff you'll just have to believe is running in the background, like X screensaver, for instance. And hopefully FB set BG should have run and passed on the wallpaper choice to your desktop. So that's how you do the startup thing in Fluxbox, and that is really pretty straightforward, I think. So the point to take away from that, I guess, is that the startup file isn't so much a place to put applications that you want to start and automatically, although I guess I could. Like if I knew every time I wanted to log in, I wanted Firefox to launch, then I could put that in there. But I gather it's meant more for things like Clipper or KMix, or if I was going to use a dock, you know, I could start the dock automatically. Things that you've added to your Fluxbox environment that you want to come up in tandem with Fluxbox itself. Okay, so Fluxbox keys, and yes, I'm not using a dock. I know sometimes, I mean, on some of my screenshots on Unix Porn, I do have a little dock. It's called Daisy for KDE. I think I mentioned it on the show before. And it is kind of a nifty little dock, and I like it because it's quick launching, you know, different applications. And I guess I've just been indoctrinated enough into the concept of docks, apparently. I thought I hadn't been, but I guess on KDE, I want a dock. But on Fluxbox, I don't feel it's necessary. I didn't want one. But there are plenty of docks out there, and some magazine or some website reviewed like all the best docs for Linux, and I forget all the different ones. You know, WBAR I know is a really lightweight one that looks really nice. That's the one that Tiny Core uses. And then there's like a Cairo doc I think is supposed to be really good. And of course Avant Window Navigator or Manager, AWN Navigator. That's a really good one. So you could totally install one of those and then have that run in your little startup file, and suddenly when you bring up Fluxbox, you've got a doc. So it's pretty cool. Fluxbox keys. Okay, so this is the second big area of Fluxbox that I think, you know, that I consider kind of essential. And talking to at least one other Fluxbox user, Peter64, I think this is one of the almost important parts of Fluxbox, because this is all your key bindings. So the keys file, again, it's really well commented, and there's a lot of stuff already in it to model your key bindings after. It's a little bit unique in that, well, I'll get to why it's unique. Well, okay, it's unique in that sometimes, you know, they call keys one thing, and I don't really think of them as one thing. So, I mean, like, mod 4, that's what they call a key. I mean, I couldn't tell you what mod 4 was, but you kind of have to look. I mean, it might be documented, too. I didn't really check, to be honest. I just kind of followed the example of the keys file. But eventually you figure out that mod 4 is the Windows key, or I guess they call that the super key. I think super underscore L would be the Windows key, and then the super underscore R would be the little menus key, or the Apple key if you're using a Mac with Linux on it. So that's what we would call it, I guess, the super key. But then in Fluxbox keys, it's called the mod 4. So that's fine. So I assign a lot of my key bindings to mod 4, or, you know, the super key or the Windows key or the Apple key, whatever, because I figure a lot of the control or alt key bindings are kind of dominated already by applications, and it tends to be that the super key is pretty safe to use. So I just do things, I mean, I really do just simple things, because basically the way I use Fluxbox is that it's kind of a launch pad for other applications, meaning that I don't really, with Fluxbox, because there is no desktop environment as such, at least not in the same way as, you know, KDE or GNOME, which are kind of like, they feel kind of self-contained environments. Fluxbox is just a window manager, basically. There's no desktop environment as such. So I use it as a launching ground, and I usually either have a terminal, well, I always have a terminal open, and I either launch the applications from the terminal just by typing in the name with an ampersand sign after it, or even more commonly nowadays, it's just a keyboard shortcut. So I've got things like mod 4T is to open a terminal, which in this case is console for me, because that's the one I know and love. So it's just the command, well, the line is exactly is mod 4 space T colon exec exec space console, and where console is the exact name of the binary. You know, you don't have to put the full path, but it needs to obviously be, it would be case sensitive and stuff like that. So mod 4K is conqueror. I think I have like mod 4Z assigned to the little Fluxbox run a command interface, you know, where it pops up a little box and you can type in something and it runs that command. I forget why I did that, mod Z, whatever, but that's what I did and it actually has been working for me. But more commonly, I finally figured out that I could just be using KRunner, which has a lot more features than the Fluxbox version of the run command. So now mod 4L, again, I have no idea why I did L. I think just because it was available, is KRunner. So whenever I hit mod 4L, KRunner comes up and I can do, you know, quick calculations, or I can look up words, or just start launch an application, or just whatever. Mod 4M for mail launches my mail client, which in this case is Thunderbird 3, which I have to call it Thunderbird 3 because that's the custom compiled version of Thunderbird that I compiled for myself at that location, and I put that in user local bin because user local bin was empty, so I just put Thunderbird 3 there because Thunderbird 2, I think, was already installed. So yeah, that's why that's called that. Mod 4F is Firefox. Mod 4X is Audacious. That's because Audacious, of course, is XMMS 2, I guess. So mod D is Dolphin, and that's an important one because that's if I do need a graphical file manager, that's how I get it, and so on and so forth. Now the interesting ones, I guess, are mod 4E, which is exec Emacs. But then I have a specific set of commands or switches or options that I run with Emacs. Yeah, I mean, they're simple commands. They're not really cool or anything, just the way I like it. But anyway, it's exec Emacs and then space dash bg black space fg wheat. The point being that you don't do quotes around the command. For the longest time, I thought that I had to do quotes around it because, you know, there were spaces and switches and things. Well, the Fluxbox thing doesn't care about that. Just after the word exec, it's going to send everything after that as a command, so no quotes. Mod 4Q is X screensaver dash command space dash activate, which starts the X screensaver so that when I walk away, you know, I can put my screensaver on and it'll lock people out. And again, no quotes there, even though there are spaces. It feels weird at first. You're like, I really need to be putting quotes around this, but in fact, you do not. Okay, so that's the keys file, and you get the idea. I mean, there's a lot more in there that you can do. Changing desktops. I mean, for instance, I decided that since I had four workspaces, I would make mod for Y, U, and I think H and J as the four, like, kind of, you know, how they're grouped together, right? Y, U, H, J, right underneath, right by, beside each other and underneath each other. So those are my workspaces. So mod for Y goes to workspace 1, U to workspace 2, H to 3, J to 4. So that's helpful. And then there are more commands that you can define, like if you want to hit a certain key combination to send a certain window to another workspace, whatever. So that's a keys file. Okay, then apps. This is the fun part because this is where you get to decide what the one app that you want for each task that you want to do should be, or multiple apps. But you know, I mean, if you're a GNOME person, you know all the GNOME apps, the GTK apps, then you can kind of configure your Fluxbox to use all of the GNOME stuff. Or if you're more of a KDE person, you can go to your repository and download all the KDE stuff, but not the Kubuntu stuff. If you're doing this on Ubuntu, don't download Kubuntu proper, because that will swap out a whole bunch of stuff. Like it'll change a lot of stuff. Like I think it even changes from GDM to KDM or something like that. So be careful about that. But all the KDE, you know, applications, the workspace, all that other stuff, you can add. And then, I mean, there's no mystery to it. I mean, all you have to do to start using these applications is, well, use these applications. So, I mean, Console and Dolphin and Conqueror are the big KDE ones that I'm using, I guess. Well, and KRunner. And I simply have those bound to certain keys. Now, if I wanted to take the time, I could go into the Fluxbox menu file, which is in your home.fluxbox/ I think root menu or something like that, or just menu. I could go in there and edit it and take all the GNOME stuff out and add the stuff that I've custom installed for myself in the menu, but the fact of the matter is I just don't use the Fluxbox menu ever, so I don't bother. But the cool thing about Fluxbox is that you can really just go around and pillage any desktop, any other desktop environment that you want. So like I was saying about the dock, you know, I mean, you can run CairoDock, or you could run WBAR or AWN, or maybe you don't want a dock. Maybe you just want a nice XFCE panel at the bottom and a GNOME panel at the top. Well, I don't know if you can do GNOME panel. I know that GNOME and KDE both kind of have these weird things where if you start too much of the desktop, it wants to just start the whole desktop. So, like, if you start KDE Plasma Desktop, then suddenly your screen turns into, you know, it looks like KDE. It's got the background, it's got the KDE bar. The Flux bar, I think, is nowhere to be seen, so you have to be careful about that. And GNOME is the same way. Like, if you do Nautilus, which is the file manager as far as I thought, but I guess it's also the desktop itself, sort of, so you get icons on your desktop, which could be a good thing if you want that, and that might be a great thing to start in the background, you know, with your startup file, I guess. I haven't tried that myself, but I mean, you could do that if you wanted icons on your desktop. But, you know, so you could use, like, an XFCE panel, you can use Dolphin as your file manager, or you could use, what is that cool one, PC Man FS or whatever it is, you know, I mean, just, or Thunar, you know, just whatever you want to use, all your favorite, like, apps down to, well, as big as your web browser, over to your file manager, down to your volume mixer, you know, all that stuff can be completely just, like I say, a piecemeal or a patchwork of all your favorite things, and to some degree, well, to a large degree, it's all going to work pretty much, it's going to work really nicely together, because it's all, they're all just like little front ends, basically, so it all pretty much works. Now, in all of these cases as well, I mean, if you're going to install, say, Dolphin, I think it's probably best to go ahead, I mean, you can probably do like an sudo aptitude install KDE workspace, or whatever Dolphin is contained in, and get Dolphin, but if you're going to do that, I would go ahead and install a lot of KDE, because, I mean, if you got no concern about hard drive space, which I don't, but you could do that, because then you'll get, like, KDE system settings, or the GNOME control panel, you know, you get all these other things that will let you kind of control other aspects of the applications that you're using, and that might be a good idea. It certainly helped me kind of configure the environment to be more like what I wanted, and I'll explain, I guess, a little bit about that in a moment when we get down to look and feel. Oh, and what do you know, we're down at look and feel right now. So, changing the theme of Fluxbox, that is really, really easy. Like, if you've ever tried to theme, like, GNOME and stuff, sometimes that can get a little bit confusing, because you have to go and find the theme, and then if it's a theme that is dependent upon some other kind of engine, like, what is it, Emerald and Bespin for KDE, and it's all these different things, so that can get pretty confusing. I don't know much about that stuff, because I'm not into it that much, but for Fluxbox, it's typically like a little directory with the name of the theme in it, and you put that directory in, I think it's /share/Fluxbox/themes, I think, or style, I think. Put that in there, and then I think you might have to restart Fluxbox from the Fluxbox menu, which would just be a right-click on the desktop, and then going down to System, and then restart. Or no, I think it's just at the bottom of the Fluxbox menu. So you just right-click, go down to the bottom of that menu, and it's just restart. And that just restarts Fluxbox, not your computer. And then if you right-click on the desktop again and go down to, I think, user styles or themes or system themes or something like that. Obviously, I'm not sitting in front of Fluxbox right now. But you do that, and then you can change the theme out from under you. And by default, Fluxbox comes with, like, 15 different themes or something like that. But you can always go to, like, box-look.org, that is box-look.org, and find other Fluxbox themes, or you can go to some known, really cool configured Fluxbox install and steal their theme, which is exactly what I did. I had been using Woolvix for a while now, really, but I was thinking, yeah, that's a really cool theme that they've got up there. Wonder how I can get it. Well, all you have to do is go, like I say, into user, /share/Fluxbox/themes, I think, or it could be styles, but I think it's themes, and grab the directory with the name of the theme that you like. In my case, it's called Blind Gray and Blind Blue, and so I just copied those to a USB thumb drive off of Woolvix, took it over to my work computer, plugged in the USB thumb drive, put the directories into /user/share/fluxbox/themes, restarted Fluxbox, and there you go. So that was really, really simple. Like I've said, the background image itself is just set with FB, set BG. There are other ways to do it, but that's the way that I use it. And I just, like I said, put a line in my startup file that issues the FB set BG command. The background that I used is called Dance of the Spirits, and that's by Ivan Kukic, or whatever his last name is. And I've talked about him on the show before. He's actually a programmer that I guess he just happened to come out with a really nice looking theme or background image. So here's the part about the system settings and the control panels and stuff. So if you install the bulk of KDE, then you'll get KDE's system settings. And you can go in there, you can actually just launch system settings. Like, the easiest way probably would be to just launch KRunner, even from a terminal, and then just type in system settings, and it'll bring up the KDE system settings. And from there, you can configure all of your Qt widgets and styles and stuff like that. Not your window borders, obviously, because you're not using KWin as your window manager, but you can set, like, the stuff inside of the applications, like the buttons and the sliders and the scroll bars and stuff like that. So you can do that there. And then GTK is controlled, I guess the easiest way to control it from what I've experienced on Fluxbox, and this is a recent thing because I never really had bothered to look into this before, but I don't know if you remember, but Dave Yates on a lot of Linux Links was complaining about Firefox looking really ugly for him when he was running it in, I don't remember where he was running it, maybe in KDE 4, I'm not really sure, but it got me thinking more about, like, gee, GTK applications don't look that good in this case or that case, you know? So I was looking into it. Well, I mean, I knew about GTK-Qt-Engine on Slackware, but I didn't know what it was called anywhere else. So I was looking around in the Ubuntu repository for something like that, and there's something called GTK-CH-Theme. So, like, change theme, except it's ch-theme. And you can install GTK-ch-theme, and I can also include in the show notes a link to that project page. And some engines, like some themes, rather. Like, if you do an aptitude search, GTK, and then pipe, and grep theme, you'll find lots of GTK themes. And then you can just run GTK-ch-theme. I think it might be ch-theme 2, even. It's really, or GTK-2-ch-theme. Theme, something weird like that, and then you can run GTK change theme and actually alter the look of your GTK applications. Because by default, once I started using Fluxbox, I would fire up like Firefox, and it would have that kind of bare bones generic X11 or X look, you know, just very, very basic buttons and things like that. So after I launched and invoked GTK change theme, then it always comes up normally now. And I don't have to do anything special in my startup file or anything. It must be some kind of setting that is flipped universally, probably in .gtk or .gnome or .gconf or something like that. So that's the answer to that. In terms of getting everything to work together and stuff, the integration is actually really, really good. I was kind of surprised at how good it was. I mean, I've used GTK and KApp side by side, certainly. Not a big deal, but I don't know. I remember people talking about a certain lack of integration on Linux desktops, and while that's still true for things like, you know, when I go to open a file, it's like, to an outside observer, it might just seem like a roll of the dice in terms of which file picker window, you know, you're going to get. Now, I would know, okay, I'm in Firefox, so I'm going to get the GNOME file picker. Okay, I'm in a KDE, a K app, I'm going to get the KDE approved, KDE 4 file picker. I'm in a Qt-based application that is not part of the K apps. I could get just a generic Qt file picker, or I could get the approved KDE file picker. I'm in an X app. Okay, I'm going to get some file picker. Okay, it's a little bit of a roll of a dice, I guess, even if you're not familiar with the environment. That kind of thing, yeah, there's a certain lack of integration there still. But in terms of me being able to go up to Clipper and getting, you know, something that I've copied it so that I can paste it, doesn't matter if I'm in an X app, in an X forwarded app on the CentOS server, that's running, you know, on my desktop and then pasting into something local. I mean, it's a very robust system. It's really, really finely tuned and well integrated. So I'm really pleased with that. And yeah, there's not really any kind of fancy hack that you have to do with that. So that's Fluxbox for you. Like I say, the style that I use it in is basically it's to give me an X environment, you know, a GUI environment, and I launch most of my apps either with my key bindings, or if it's something that I don't have a key binding set up for, I generally speaking just type it into a terminal with an ampersand sign after it. I know I could hit like super L or super Z to get either the Fluxbox or the KDE run command interface and run the command from there, but I just never think of that because I'm so used to in Fluxbox typing in the command because that's how I used to do it way back when, so that's how I do it. But yeah, so that's how I use Fluxbox, and that's how you can configure yours. And I think you'll find that I don't know, somehow it almost feels more like your own desktop after a while because you can really, really just throw anything in there, you know, just make it a mix up of everything that you want. That to me is its like little strength. And I know that you can do that with anything, GNOME, KDE, XFCE, LXDE, it doesn't matter, Rat Poison, doesn't matter, you can do it with anything. But even so, it's just kind of, that's how I think of Fluxbox. It's like the place that I can make my environment really, really optimized for the way that I need to work with it. And it is just that. It's everything, you know, I only run about 5 applications at work, and they're all bound to that, to a keyboard shortcut. It's very quick, it's very easy, it's not extraneous, there's nothing extraneous, you know, nothing to distract me, no fancy plasmoids to play around with, no extra games anywhere, you know, it's just Fluxbox in the background, and the big applications that I'm using in the foreground, and that's that. So, yes, I like it. It's working for me. And check out the pictures if you want at unixporn.com, and just look for my album. I'm not really bragging about it. It's just that people have commented on it and said that it looked pretty workable. So you can check that out if you want. And please post your pictures on Unix Porn. Everyone wants to see your desktop. It doesn't have to be fancy or cool or exciting. It just needs to be a Linux desktop because we just can't see enough of that stuff. So do that. UnixPorn.com. Okay, well, that music means it's time for coffee. So go brew yourself up a cup of coffee, fix it to your liking, and then come back and we will continue the show. It's the 27th right now as I record this, so yesterday from 1400 until really this morning, until around about 3 o'clock in the morning, I held the Great Linux Multimedia Sprint. And this was, you might have heard of this on Linux Outlaws, on Tilts, on, I think, The Cranks, and Techie Geek, I think, were the shows. Oh, and I think Verbal released a show and played the promo. So it was around, you know, here and there, and I've probably forgotten another show that played the promo. But yeah, it was around a little bit. I didn't give people much warning. It's not really that kind of event, you know. It's more like, let's just get together and do this thing and get it over with. So I think I gave people about 2 weeks notice and then held the event on the 26th. And the idea was that we would all sit around in a virtual meeting place, so IRC, and download as much raw material multimedia kind of stuff as we possibly could. So I'd already noticed that, and I'm sure a lot of people have noticed, that Linux doesn't exactly come with a plethora of tools for multimedia. Now, that's not to say that you don't have the environment. I mean, there's great things for multimedia. Inkscape, GIMP, Qtractor, Blender, Ardour, Audacity, Krita, you get the idea. We have great studio space. We just don't have the stuff to put into the studio space. We've got great synthesizers, but when you turn it on, there's no sound that comes out of them. We got great canvases, but we don't have really a whole lot of brushes to choose from. That kind of thing. So we all sat around and we just downloaded as much free and open source material as we possibly could, meaning brushes, patterns, textures, sound fonts, sound loops, plugins, just everything that we could possibly find. The idea is that this way we get a richer environment for multimedia creation, because there's nothing worse than sitting down at the computer and you're going to do some kind of really cool music project. And so you start it, and it's starting out great. And then you realize you need a cello sound. You don't have a cello sound, so you have to go out into the internet and find a cello sample or a cello sound bank. So you go search around and you find it, download it, you install it. You may or may not have to restart the application that you want to use it in, and then you keep going. And then you realize you really need kind of a synth pad. So again, you go out and look for it, and so on and so forth. It kills the creative spirit really, really fast. It also just makes it kind of inefficient. I mean, surely we've all sat down in front of the computer to do one really quick thing. You know, you just got to retouch a photo just before you rush off to a presentation or to the store to get it printed or whatever. And then you realize that what you really need is just that particular gradient, you know, to just give that sky a little bit more depth and texture. Well, you don't have just the right gradient. So you can either sit there and try to design it yourself, or you can go out to the internet and go find some prepackaged gradients that you can then download and install. And again, you probably have to restart the application so that it reviews the different things that it's got available to it and stuff like that. You may or may not. It depends on what you're installing, actually. But the point being that it doesn't turn into such a quick job at that point, does it? It turns into kind of a process. There's also something just very, very un-Unix-like, very un-Linux-like, very un-free software-like to have one person go out and find all of these things that they want. Let's say 800 fonts, you know, just every kind of font they could possibly want. Block fonts, serif fonts, sans serif fonts, script fonts, dingbats, stylized, foreign, just everything you can think of. They found them all. They downloaded them all. And they're happy. They're great. They're a happy camper. Well, someone else comes along the next day and wants a couple of hundred fonts too, and they want the same kind of things. So what do? They have to go out to the internet and they have to download all those fonts from this probably the same site, you know? It's the same thing. It's complete and utter duplication of labor. And there's just something about that is just not pragmatic, and it's so inefficient. It's horrific to even imagine. So yeah, I wanted to avoid this kind of thing, and I felt like what should really happen is that after we're all finished setting up our Linux multimedia system to do what we want it to do, we should then be able to go out and download in a couple of clicks big packs of raw material. I want a pack of textures. I want a pack of patterns, pack of fonts, a pack of sound fonts for my synthesizers, some Blender plugins, some extra icons, just, you know, you name it, whatever I will need to be happy in front of my multimedia system and to feel like I'm not a second-class computer user, you know. I don't have to look over at the proprietary systems and be envious of all the free stuff that they came with. Not to mention that a lot of that free kind of like pre-packaged corporate stuff is often very, I don't know, it feels very prepackaged and like some business somewhere and, you know, came up with it. So some of that stuff, yeah, the template is there, but whether you'd actually want to use it in a serious work of art, maybe not so much. Whereas the stuff that you actually find out online by independent artists who are actually being creative and just doing stuff for fun, well, suddenly you've got raw material that you actually want to use. You want to use it and give that artist credit for their creativity. You want to be a part of their creativity. You want them to be a part of your creativity. It's more of a, I don't know, a communal or I guess open sourcey feel to it, a free culture feel to it. So these are all really cool ideas. The problem is, I guess, the implementation of these ideas just wasn't really there yet. And I know that Ubuntu had kind of, they sort of made a stab at it where they were kind of doing like demo content or something like that, like user-contributed demo content. It wasn't really good to do anything with. It was more just like, well, what it sounds like. I mean, it's a showcase. It's kind of like, here's what some people did on Linux. And I know that a lot of distributions try to package as many fonts and stuff, maybe not on the disk for a default download, since they are trying to make their downloads manageable and they don't want to include everything in the world, you know, in your distro when you're downloading it, because maybe you're not someone who needs 800 fonts. That would be understandable. But so if you do, like, I know on Fedora, if you do like a Yum group list or do a search for fonts, you'll see that there are some font packages of free and, I guess, properly licensed fonts, and that's all very good, and that's great. And I know that the logistics of going out and finding font artists, font designers, who understand what an operating system is, understand the concept of one of them actually being free, and then being okay with their font being packaged in a non-commercial way along under the banner of that operating system, the logistics of that is incredibly difficult for a couple of different reasons. Number one, because like I say, you kind of have to explain all that to the font designer, and the chances of many of the font designers, I mean, not that font designers don't understand anything, but I mean, it's just they're in their world of font design, and you try to tell them about this free operating system, and then you know, I mean, you can imagine, I mean, you've tried to tell people about Linux before. Sometimes it's a couple of weeks just to get them to kind of wrap their mind around the concept and to really understand what you're talking about. So there's that, and then there's also the problem of, I would say, abandonware, more or less. I mean, there's a lot of sites out there with a lot of great content up there, and sometimes you email that artist or you post a comment or you try to contact that person and you just never hear anything back from them. And I don't know whether it's because they are just antisocial or whether it's because they've moved on in their life or they've moved on to the next hot artist community site or what, but actually contacting these people is a lot harder than you might imagine. And then there's the third thing of a lot of these sites wanting you to have to go to the site, physically go to the site, click on the Google ads or whatever. And you might say, well, gee, it's, you know, we owe them that because they're going to get money or hits or something if we click on, you know, they're going to get more Google juice or something. And that's great and that's wonderful, but it's also really, really inefficient, and that's not what the internet is all about, in my opinion. So I just think that it makes a lot more sense for a couple of people to get together and download a whole bunch of these multimedia components. And so that would be all the fonts and all the patterns and all the sound loops and all this other good stuff. Get together, do the work, make it happen, and then share the wealth, basically. Just post all these downloaded raw materials as some kind of torrent file or on a host somewhere that is donating a lot of space and a lot of bandwidth, which probably isn't going to happen, and point people to it and say, go for it. Download 800 fonts if that's what you need. Download 6 gigabytes of sound loops if that's what you need. Download 600 megabytes of synth patches and sound fonts. Whatever you need. 190 megabytes of patterns and textures. 25 megabytes of brush files. Photoshop and GIMP brush files that you can load into GIMP. Template files. Some icon files. You know, just whatever, really. Something that's multimedia. Go download it, and it's a one-stop shop. You don't have to go to a dozen different sites, and you don't have to navigate through them and register at them and find all the content. You grab the content. That was what the Linux Multimedia Sprint was, and it happened last night, and it went really, really amazingly well. It was, I really didn't expect. I expected for most of the time I would be alone, and then I figured probably some people would stop in, you know, some of my friends who kind of are taking pity on me or something, and they'd stop in and they'd help out a little bit, and then they'd get bored and they'd wander away, which, I mean, I was ready for that. I understand that, frankly. I've got no problem with that. But what happened instead was that I signed on to irc.binrev.net at 1400 when I said I was going to be there, and there were like 7 people already there. Someone had already opened up the channel, and they were there waiting for me to sign on and start the event. So I did. I told them that we'd tackle the fonts first, and we all sat around and downloaded fonts for a while, and then we moved on to some Photoshop and GIMP brushes and patterns and textures. And I keep saying Photoshop brushes because GIMP takes Photoshop brushes, so it really is Photoshop brushes, but that doesn't mean that we're doing that for Photoshop, just to clarify that. I'm not a Photoshop user, and I don't encourage the use of Photoshop by any means, but I do encourage the use of their brushes, because GIMP can just automatically load them right up, no problem at all. It's quite nice. So, and then we moved on to sound, and I posted the Blender plugins that I've collected over a while. And so, yeah, so we kind of downloaded them all individually, each taking like a component or in a category of a certain site or whatever, and then we all posted them to a central server, and then I downloaded them all from that central server, and I'm going to kind of organize it all and make sure that all the licensing issues are are as best of my ability, you know, sorted out. I don't want to put anything up there that people are explicitly saying, you know, I don't want my stuff used and, you know, stuff like that. So I'm going to try to do a little bit of organization and stuff. And then I'm going to post them as torrent files, and hopefully people will, you know, seed them and make them really, really available for everyone else in the world, especially the Linux multimedia users who otherwise are going to sit down in front of their computer and not have anything to play with yet. I don't want those people to have to go out and hit every site on the internet with free content and do their little fake registration like we did last night, you know, with fake names and fake email addresses so we can get into the site and we don't get spammed for the rest of our lives from the site, and then we get all the content and then we leave and we never go back to the site again. And I'm never going to go back to any of those sites again. Well, except like Freesound and Defont and a couple of the other ones, but well, actually probably a lot of them. But I mean, you shouldn't have to go back to those sites if you're not someone who keeps track of those sites anyway. And there's just no reason for everyone in the world to have to go through and do the same amount of work as everyone else. You know, it's too much duplication of labor, it's too much bandwidth, it's too much time spent, it's not healthy for anyone. Now, this brings me to the point of how the event went. Well, like I say, it went really well. We got like, I think, 3 gigabytes of just things like fonts and patterns and textures and gradients and things like that. And that's pretty amazing in and of itself, because these are not really that, these aren't big files. You know, like if you download a font, you're talking about, I don't know, I haven't actually looked, but I mean, at max 2 megabytes. I mean, and that's like, that would be a lot of variations on that typeface, bold and oblique and italics and italic bold and stuff like that. So that would be a big font file. And not many of the things were very large. I think some of the pattern, or some of the textures rather, were kind of big because they're like really high quality photographs, basically, of just things, of textures and things like that that you find out in the world. So those were sometimes fairly large, but certainly not 3 gigabytes. So I mean, it was quite a lot of stuff to see that it all amounted to 3 gigabytes of small sources, you know. So that was cool. And then a couple of people, Jay Lindsay and Dwick or whatever his name is, tackled Freesound, and I did some Freesound as well. And we got a lot of sound loops and sample packs and things like that, and that was another 6 or 7 or 8 gigs, so some total would have been, I think, probably about 10 gigabytes, which sounds, I don't know how it sounds, actually, I don't know if it sounds like a lot or a little, but if you think about, like, an install disk of a proprietary OS, where it is, it's quite large, you know, it's a lot larger than you think it should be, and that's often because you are installing a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, you're getting those special little effects and all these little sound loops for you to make your little dance music things to and stuff like that. So it is a lot, and it's great. It's a lot of raw material, and people are going to be able to go to the torrent and download the torrent and use the content. So overall, I think it was a huge success, and I'm not going to name everyone who was there because inevitably I will forget someone, and I don't like doing that. So all the people who were there, and I didn't bother like counting how many people showed up or anything like that, because there was kind of a never-ending cycle of people. You know, it was like there'd be 5 or 6 active people and a couple of lurkers and a couple of semi-active people who were, I guess, moving at a slower pace, you know, because they were at work or because they, you know, they just couldn't. Whatever, it doesn't matter. I mean, everyone was welcome, so I didn't care, you know, how long it took or whether they were doing any work or they were just lurking, whatever. I didn't really care. But, you know, and then that group of people would kind of, they'd have to go to bed or they'd have to go do homework or whatever, you know, have dinner or whatever. And then another group of people would kind of trickle in, and then it would all kind of start up again. So it was really, 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 really impressive. I was amazed how it went, and I'm sure I sound kind of like an open source noob or something. I mean, this is probably kind of just how it goes. I mean, that's the community, right? That's why we all like the community aspect of this stuff, and that we actually support each other and have ideas and do cool things like this and actually get together to do a little bit of hard work once in a while, you know? We don't just, I don't know, we don't sit around and wait for a business somewhere to say, I think it would be beneficial and profitable for us to go out and gather all these materials and then sell it to everyone. We actually go out and get it done, which I think is a big, big deal. And when I praise Linux for being like unto the anarchist ideal, That's one of the ways that I'm talking about, is that we're not waiting around for someone else to do it. We're doing it ourselves. We are sitting down and doing the work, no matter who we are. And then the other aspect of it is simply the idea of direct action, which is really cool to me. And direct action means that basically you don't just sit around and talk about it all day, or you don't sit down and set up a subcommittee and appoint a subcommittee chairperson so that they can then construct a committee with a committee chairperson so that they can then address the complicated issue facing the life and times of modern computer and Linux usage in relation to the multimedia void of raw materials and so on and so forth. You know, you don't have that kind of bureaucratic or sort of full of hot air kind of aspect. You've got direct action, meaning that you see a problem and you take action to resolve the problem. So I saw, and I think a lot of people saw, and judging from emails that I got after I did like the QTractor tutorials and stuff like that, quite a few people emailed me things like, "Hey, look, I just installed QSynth. Why aren't I getting any sound out of it?" Well, that's because you don't have any sound fonts installed for it to actually play. Hey, I just installed, Blender. How come there's not, like, well, I mean, something as ridiculous as, like, a lightsaber filter, you know? I mean, it's just whatever, you know? Like, why aren't there these little fancy little things? Well, they're there. They're just not bundled with it. You have to go find it. Well, now, because we all sat down and just solved that problem, they're going to be there. They're going to be online. They're going to be torrent files that we can all grab and seed for each other, and that will be a good thing. It will be a very, very good thing. So it was really exciting. It was really successful, and I just think it really kind of shows, you know, it really proves that the community aspect of Linux really, really does work. It's no joke. It's not a myth. It's not someone else out there doing it. It's you and me. It's people like you and I. We sit down and we know if you see the problem, you fix it, and suddenly the entire community benefits. So that's the show for this week. Thank you for listening. This has been Klaatu. My email address is klaatu@hackerpublicradio.org or klaatu@linuxcranks.info. You can also reach me on Jabber at notklaatu@jabber.org. You can also visit the site at thebadapples.info, and you can find me on IRC on the Freenode server in channels like Lotta Linux Links and Linux Cranks and other such Linux-related places as that. And my nick on there is not Klaatu. Thanks for listening.